Over the past several months, we have been looking at our UU principles periodically during worship. And so today, before I turn it over to our guest, which I will do at some point, I promise, but I got to talk a little bit first. Today, I'm going to briefly consider our sixth principle, which is the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. Some days, perhaps especially today, such a goal might feel like pure fantasy. We might look at that principle and say, but what about this terrible war? What about what people are dealing with in communities not too far from our own? What about all this injustice and violence that we see? How could we say we have this goal? How could we ever get there? I say this is precisely why we need such a vision. In that same spirit, the Peace Institute says peace is possible. And they say this not because they're not paying attention to what's going on in the world, but because they are paying attention to what's going on in the world. And so because we are paying attention, we say we have the goal of peace, liberty, and justice for all. Milton, I am so glad that you are here with us today, not only because I know you are a wonderful human being, but also I'm particularly glad because you can speak to us about your role at the Peace Institute as Director of Reentry Services. I am convinced that the very existence of reentry services at the Peace Institute has something to teach us about Unitarian Universalism. So before I do turn it over to Milton, which I will, I first want to explain, what do I mean when I say the existence of reentry services at the Peace Institute has something to teach us about our faith tradition? So the Lewis D. Brown Peace Institute is a center for healing, teaching, and learning for families and communities dealing with murder, trauma, grief, and loss. They host the Mother's Day Walk for Peace each year. This is their biggest fundraiser. We have participated over the last several years. In this event, surviving family members of homicide victims come together with allies and walk through the streets of Boston and declare that peace is possible. The Peace Institute offers desperately needed support to family members in the immediate aftermath of a homicide, as well as support and healing and leadership development to family members of homicide victims on an ongoing basis. They are also a training center. They make their tools and their best practices available to providers who work with communities dealing with violence. And they are a hub of advocacy. They influence public policy with the leadership of those who are most impacted by these issues. So all of this crucially necessary work would be plenty for an organization to take on. That's enough, right? But no, the Peace Institute knows that to focus solely on surviving family members of homicide victims misses half the picture. The Peace Institute recognizes that incarceration also enacts a kind of violence on our communities. Our punishment system breaks up families, destabilizes communities, and traumatizes the people who are locked up. A prison sentence is more likely to reproduce cycles of trauma and harm than it is to offer rehabilitation to inmates or any kind of restoration or healing to communities who are dealing with loss. People in the Peace Institute family who have lost their loved ones to violence know that the perpetrators of this violence may one day return to the community. And then what? And deeper than that, I have witnessed the fact that the Peace Institute family recognizes that perpetrators are human beings too, with families and stories and their own pain. And it was at the Peace Institute that I first heard this expression, hurt people hurt people. And so the Peace Institute works with survivors and with perpetrators. And this is why I say the Peace Institute can teach us something about how to be Unitarian Universalists. Unitarian Universalists, we have a reputation for having a very rosy view of human nature. We have, over the centuries, taken the biblical concept that humans were created in the image of God, and we have run with it. We believe everyone has inherent worth and dignity. We believe in human agency, and that by our good work here on Earth, we can make a difference, right? We believe all of these things, that this is how we can build a better world. And this is very hopeful stuff. This is near and dear to my heart as a Unitarian Universalist. But it's not the full story of human nature, and we know it. We don't necessarily know how to reconcile our belief in the goodness of human nature with the very real harm that we can do to one another. Harm that the Peace Institute knows only too well. Given that it was founded by and continues to serve and be led by people who have lost their loved ones to violence. The Peace Institute teaches us something about how to be Unitarian Universalists because it is right there, offering love and healing in the wake of some of the worst things that we can do to one another. And it is offering that love and healing to everyone involved. The Peace Institute teaches us something about how to be Unitarian Universalists because by working with perpetrators, they are bringing to life our belief that no human being is expendable. So I want to say thank you for your work, and I want to stop talking so we can hear more about your work. So please, Milton, come on up. Just a camera for you after you get over here, because I know you're tall. Come on over, stand up here, and I'm going to make it a little taller. Oh, no, it's good. It's fine.
Okay, awesome. Well, thank you so much. It's really a pleasure, a joy to be here, to speak before you, and to be in your company. It's awesome. This service is rich. Clearly, it's rich. Jolie is a dear friend of mine who I love. We go way back. She's awesome. And I'm not telling you anything that you don't know. Certainly, you know that she is. If you thought that you were going to come here today and sit and get comfy and listen to the speaker, oh, how wrong you were. I have just a bit of an exercise I would like you to do. This is practice for the Mother's Day Walk for Peace that you will attend. Now, I didn't ask you. I said you will attend. we have a chant that we do during the walk. And so I'm going to say what I say, and then you're going to shout. No, I said shout. I didn't say whisper. You're going to shout peace. The next thing I'm going to say, you're going to answer now. You ready?
Yes.
What do we want?
Peace.
When do we want it?
Now.
What do we want?
Peace.
When do we want it?
Now.
So y'all are great. You got to be there. You got to be there. You guys are great. That is so awesome. Jolie said some of it, and for this talk, my theme is we, not me, not just you, but we are our brother's keeper. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean that you perhaps have to take me home and keep me? No, that's kidnapping. You can't do that. You see, that's not what it means. It does mean that we are responsible for one another. Now, there is an idea that floats throughout the world that says they're bad people. They've done wrong. They deserve what they get. They are, and there's a whole host of tags that people are tagged with. They're criminals. They're wrongdoers. They're sinners, aren't we all? and these kinds of ideas, I heard my brother come up here and talk about racism and that whole concept. Those ideas speak only to that. Racism doesn't just mean black against white or white against this or Hispanic. And no, it can mean you don't do it the way that I do it. So you're different than me. So now you are racist or you are prejudiced or you are this, that, and the other thing. That's what it is. So I am going to the Peace Institute, as you know, Jolie said, primarily is a victim-centered organization. And what we didn't know early on was that perpetrators are, for the most part, victims too. You see, because Jolie mentioned that they've been hurt, and so therefore they hurt someone else, unfortunately. As we consider the issues of crime and punishment, we often recognize and understand the process of holding one who engages in criminal activity accountable for his or her actions. The most common, most often used method of punishment is a term of imprisonment. And while we as a society, as a community, often ponder the whys of a thing, not necessarily because we are so concerned, but rather because of our curious nature and our insatiable desire to feed ourselves a story to tell, perhaps if we dared to mix our inquisitiveness with an ounce of care, we might ponder the reasons for the whys. We are quick to judge and condemn and reluctant to hear the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth. So help us God. Somehow we forget that everything comes from something. Thus, we ought to look at the root cause of a thing. After all, we can never truly appreciate how a thing evolved unless we see it from its inception. Unless we study a thing from the beginnings of its life, we can never know what went into that life. Therefore, we cannot say that we understand the why of a thing. So let's not be quick to pass judgment and contribute to the disenfranchisement of our people. The reason why we find ourselves or find the, the reason why one finds him or herself involved in criminal behaviors are many. Some were neglected and physically abused and or sexually abused as children. Some were raised by parents who themselves were dysfunctional, thus incapable of loving, nurturing, and caretaking their children. Some were born with a developed physical and mental disability that presented insurmountable challenges and hardships too great to bear. We as a community must not continue to practice the exclusion of those that are different than us. people returning from incarceration. We must do all we can to, we must do all we can to help those that are hurt, to treat those that are ill, to house those that are homeless, to employ those that are jobless. We as a community must learn to unite in a consorted effort to address and battle the problems that plague our neighborhoods. Let's realize that the choice to help them adjust is a choice to bring a greater degree of safety to our communities. United we stand, you know it, divided we fall. The old adage is true, and it applies to us all. So, I'm glad you asked the question, why reentry? So I'll tell you. As you know, the priority of the Lewis D. Brown Peace Institute is to serve as a center of learning, teaching, and healing, as Jolie mentioned, for families impacted by murder and grief. And I won't go into that whole thing. She already did. And she did that ever so eloquently, as she does. Sadly enough, some come out to commit murder. These are the incarcerated people. Some come out to commit murder to be, and some come out to be murdered, leaving families and extended loved ones grief-stricken and the community riddled with violence. So recognizing the enormity of this issue and how closely related it is to our work, because we serve the very families of those returning from incarceration, and with our mission being to promote peace over violence, it seemed imperative that we not only pay more attention to the issues of incarceration and reentry, but that we do something with a focus on bringing our incarcerated loved ones home with the tools conducive to healing, growth, and positive change. So we developed a curriculum called Peace From Within, a multi-week course for incarcerated men to learn the foundations of living a peaceful life. We currently teach the course at the Plymouth County Correctional Facility. It is important that the work begins prior to release in order to foster a positive mindset in preparation for release. We facilitate an additional 6 group session called the Community Reentry Preparation Group, which is offered closer to their release and delivered with a more intense, tough love approach. I facilitate that. The Peace From Within and the Community Reentry Prep Group inspired the development now in process of the Community Reentry Services Program, which will rely heavily on the mentor concept, recruiting and training mentors to be instrumental in the implementation of agreed upon reentry plans. The overall objective of the program is to provide this population with opportunities to address their criminogenic issues. You can look that up later. And begin the journey of facing their trauma to heal, changing their lifestyle to grow, and becoming an asset to their family and their community while ultimately reducing recidivism. We are having conversations with mental health professionals and other stakeholders to create a system of wraparound services within which come cross referrals can happen according to our shared needs assessments as we engage this population, as we help them fashion their personal goals and objectives. First off, we have begun to build a reentry starter kit to give according to their need to individuals upon their release. Such kits would be a backpack containing necessary items, toiletries, food, gift cards from Stop and Shop, clothing voucher, a homecoming resource guide, and other items omitted here. The purpose of this kit is not only to fulfill an immediate tangible need, but more importantly, to serve as an initial incentive to draw their commitment, as we have learned that tangibility with this target population denotes sincerity and caring and giving them a sense of belonging and trust, which likely renders them more receptive to deprogramming from the impact of incarceration and reprogramming to embrace the reentry journey. Well, as with everything else, funding is needed. If you are as passionate about this work as I am and have a heart to help and a mind to give, we invite you to do so. Let me say that in closing, let me say, when people come out of incarceration, it's been my experience that the majority of people who come out of incarceration have a heart to do well. They want to do the right thing. They need a support system in order to do the right thing. What we found are for the reasons of such a high recidivism rate, and you know about it, you hear about it. Guys come out and they're out for a couple of months, they're out for a year, maybe 2 years, and they go back. What's wrong with that picture? But do they like it there? No, I trust not. However, what we found is that there is a process missing. And that process is deprogramming from the impact of incarceration. See, it's one thing they go there a mess in the first place. They don't get taught properly while they're there. And the whole traumatic experience while they're there is impactful. And so PTSD and things of that nature are alive and well, or not so well in this case. And these guys come out and then they are never deprogrammed. So they're expected to get a job, get a wife, get a life, and do well. Yet no one's treating the impacts of incarceration. And then after they are deprogrammed, they need to be reprogrammed to society's norms. You have guys who've been incarcerated for upwards of 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 years. I'm speaking at a parole board shortly coming up for a guy that's been in 44 years. He's expected to come out and do what? He's never had a job in his life. He went to prison when he was 17 years old. He doesn't know what working is. He's going to do what? Well, first, if I have anything to do with it, he's going to be deprogrammed from that 44-year incarceration experience. Because clearly, he's coming out a mess. And if we don't deprogram him, he almost doesn't have a choice except to go right back to whatever it was that he got him in there, because he doesn't know anything else. And he's afraid of society. Why not? And he has adopted, if you will, he has adopted the norms of incarceration. That's what's comfortable for him now. 44 years, you think? That's what he knows. That's what he's comfortable with. He's got his guys, his buddies, his what have you. That's what he does. That structure. That's what he almost needs. unless he is deprogrammed. So I am working with Boston College with some of the psychological staff there to develop a deprogramming curriculum and a reprogramming curriculum to get these guys so that we can do that work and get them to a point where they can actually be deprogrammed and reprogrammed in a right way and come back, because we are looking for them to be assets to our community, not deficits. Huh? We are our brother's keeper. It is up to us and not them to keep not only them, but our community. You see, let's not get it twisted. I'm not overly concerned about some of the labels we call inmate, the prisoner, the almost prisoner, the kind of prisoner, all these kind of labels. I'm not so much concerned about them. I am more concerned about the community that they have to come back to. How can I not be concerned about their well-being and be concerned about the community's well-being? If they are coming back, and 97% of them are coming back, there's only a small percentage who have like life and are going to be there forever. 97% of them are coming back. What are we going to do with them? So the Peace Institute wants to be a part of that healing. Jolie spoke to the fact that while we're working with families of homicide victims, there's a miss if we're not working with families of the perpetrators and the perpetrators themselves. If we are going to heal and grow and become whole, we have to service the whole picture. If they are coming back to wreak havoc on our community because they're not getting the proper services, then we lost. We lost because now we are creating the very victims that we've been working with. We're creating even more victims because we're not servicing the guy that's coming out to wreak havoc on the community. So we need to be concerned about what's going to happen to our community when these guys come out. This is a worthwhile cause. We must, as a community, we must, as the people in society, look to that issue, face on, deal with that issue, take care of our community, take care of that guy that's coming back out, and be a whole community, if you will, and be our better version of ourselves. Because you know what it says, and I'll end here. If we are not part of the solution, then by omission, we are part of the problem. So we need to take that, consider that, recognize that, and know that if I do absolutely nothing about that cause, then I'm part of that problem. And we'll leave it there. It's been a joy. I can see the faces behind the mask smiling and grinning and things, and that's wonderful. Some don't have masks on. That's awesome, too. I can actually see your face, and that's wonderful. Thank you so much just for your attentiveness. Thank you for the ears that hear. Thank you for the face or part of the face that smiles. Thank you for the smiling eyes. You know, I want to end. I'm saying, I sound like a preacher, huh? I keep saying I'm ending, huh? I keep saying I'm gonna take my seat now, right? That never happens, does it? I'm thinking about a song that just came so true. The song was out prior to the pandemic, and I don't know if some of you may know it. eyes without a face. Does anybody know that? There is a song, it's by Billy Idol. Listen, Google it. Listen, eyes without a face. This is deep. This is deep stuff. I heard it and I said, whoa, it just came true. We're running around, we're all eyes without a face. You know what I mean? And it's awesome. But take that in. Thank you so much. Much love.